Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as we close out the week. And Jim, I just need to bring to your attention, I got a message from one of our listeners yesterday thanking us for being the most optimistic podcast about the future of this campaign. So, thank you for listening. Thank you for letting us know that we've encouraged you. I'm not quite sure what other podcasts you're listening to, but Jim, we're helping somebody out, so that's good news.
Greg, like you, I really wish at some point either Microsoft Word or Twitter or all the various folks who do email programs could come up with a sarcasm font because I can't tell whether they mean, yes, we really do. We try to have a cheery, you know, fun tone to this, or whether, no, our recent bad martinis and crazy martinis have been so quasi-apocalyptic that, you know, what goes really well with your podcast? Hemlock.
In all seriousness, we do thank you very much for your message. We sincerely hope we are encouraging you in what is a difficult season for conservatives. We love to hear from our listeners, so any feedback is much appreciated. On to the good martini today, and a little bit of a reversal on one of the stories that broke last fall. This is from John Sexton over at Hot Air. It was big news last October when an investigator with the Select Benghazi Committee named Bradley Podlitzka claimed he had been fired for taking issue with the committee's partisan focus on Hillary Clinton. Democrats seized on the allegation as proof that the House committee was nothing more than a partisan witch hunt. Today, Politico reports that Podlitzka's lawyers have quietly dropped everything about Hillary Clinton from his lawsuit for wrongful termination. Quote, attorneys for the Air Force Reserve Major filed an amendment to his original claim in late February, striking the legal clauses that included his accusation that the panel's investigation was increasingly focused on Clinton and that he was dismissed for refusing to go along. It is a significant change from his original assertion. And so the lawyers for Podlitzka not explaining to Politico why the claims had been removed. So, Jim, I'm sure this will get just as much media attention as the claims did last fall.
Ha! There are two or three great ironies that come out of this development. One being that from the beginning, this was a strange complaint. Look, of course, you know, a good chunk of the Benghazi investigation is going to revolve around Hillary Clinton. You know, she's running the State Department, right? This is, you know, this was the death of an ambassador. The State Department had turned down a lot of the requests for security. Like, why wouldn't it? It seemed like he was impugning or suggesting a political motive when this was where the investigation was headed. And then two, it was conveniently timing. He'd had disputes with his bosses over various things. And the question is, was this being used as a political, you know, was he finding a way to get back at his bosses by accusing them of having a political motive and really going after, you know, making Trey Gowdy, giving him a giant headache in exchange for not giving him what he wanted in this painful, frustrating separation from his employment? Well, now this happens. I remember this happened, and I believe it was Jake Tapper who broke the story, Greg. I wrote a corner post, rather skeptical of it, and Jake Tapper, who's otherwise a fine, fine reporter, gave me unbelievable grief about it. Let's just say it was you know, my scalding messages from Jake Tapper about my rather skeptical response to this guy in the corner. And here we are. And my, you know, my deep suspicion was that this guy told a story that sounded really exciting and hot, and Jake Tapper put him front and center. And now it appears that he disappeared very quickly. And this allegation that Trey Gowdy was this crazed partisan who's, you know, do you notice that every prosecutor who goes up against the Clintons, whether it's Kenneth Starr or Trey Gowdy or any one of these guys, they always just say, oh, they're out of control. Oh, they're crazed partisans. They're frothing at the mouth. It's never that, no, the Clintons actually did something wrong. It's always an out-of-control prosecutor, you notice. So it's good that this guy is recanting or certainly seems to have dropped those points. It certainly suggests that Trey Gowdy is the straight shooter we thought he was. But kind of frustrating that the allegations get screaming, you know, dominant coverage even from usually reliable reporters like Jake Tapper. And that this development is probably going to get much less attention now that the damage has been done to Gowdy's reputation.
Never mind.
Nutella,
yes, exactly. All right, on to the bad martini now, and this is also from a Hot Air. Jazz Shaw writing the story. He's referring to some earlier reports from the week suggesting that behind the scenes, President Obama is strongly urging Democratic donors to get away from Bernie Sanders, go towards Hillary Clinton, and he's going to be very active in the campaign to make sure that Hillary Clinton is elected in order to preserve his signature achievements, Obamacare, the Iran deal, and probably several other things along the way as well. And, of course, when it comes to Hillary Clinton's electoral prospects, she obviously matches up very well with Donald Trump. She's in pretty much a dead heat with Ted Cruz. And the caveat always, of course, is that she's probably the favorite at this point, unless she's indicted. And Jazz Shaw is saying that's simply not going to happen. Quote, "With the president being so clearly invested in electing a Democrat in general and Hillary Clinton in particular to continue his legacy, there's simply no way he would risk putting his thumb on the scale for a candidate who might be essentially disqualified if she had to run the last stage of her campaign from a jail cell. With all that in mind, it's difficult to conclude anything other than a presumption that Obama knows that Clinton will face no such peril. But how could he know that if the investigation isn't even finished?" And he points to the Justice Department essentially scrapping a recommendation for prosecution of Huma Abedin over embezzlement, even though the inspectors general recommended such a thing. He concludes by saying, "The game is rigged, folks. At this point, even the FBI must be wondering why they're even bothering with all this work." So sounds a tad fatalistic, certainly, Jim. But given what we saw with Lois Lerner and Fast and Furious and other things coming from the Justice Department, it's certainly not an unlikely outcome.
I guess I'm not entirely sure I buy into the Jazz theory that President Obama, you know, urging Democratic donors behind the scenes to help Hillary automatically means no indictment is coming. One point I think kind of really hasn't gotten nearly enough attention in this election cycle has been that, look, Hillary Clinton is the status quo candidate, right? She's already served in Obama's cabinet. She was the Secretary of State. She is the closest thing to continuing Obama as you're going to get. Bernie Sanders runs around the country and he's the guy saying that the system, you know, the system has never been more rigged in favor of the super wealthy. The middle class is dying off. The real unemployment level is, you know, 10%, and that youth unemployment has never been worse. If you're President Obama, you know, nominating Bernie Sanders is kind of an implicit implicit rejection of you. It's saying you did not get the job done. America is not doing better off under your presidency. So he was always President Obama was always going to gravitate closer to Hillary Clinton than Bernie Sanders. And so I'm not that surprised to see the idea that Obama behind the scenes is saying, yeah, you know, we should all line up behind Hillary. And this, I mean, look, we always kind of knew the odds of an Obama Justice Department handing down an indictment of Hillary Clinton was not terribly likely. Now, out of this scenario that Jazz is painting, we've all heard the rumors that FBI Director James Comey and other high-level FBI officials are ready to walk if they feel like their recommendations are being ignored. If they feel like their investigation has been politicized and there's a political effort to protect Hillary Clinton, they'll walk off the job. That might be as bad for Hillary Clinton as an actual indictment. Or if it's not as bad, it's almost as bad. It would give the Republican nominee, whether it's Trump or Cruz or anybody else, a giant talking point that they would beat the drum on that all the way to November. So I don't know if this is necessarily the case. It is, you know, perhaps a little bit revealing that there's no indication that this has become a major concern for Obama at all. And that maybe he just assumes that Loretta Lynch will not would never, you know, take an act like that. And, you know, in most likelihood, the other scenario that keeps getting painted is that the possibility Department of Justice will slow walk this, will basically try to delay this every single step of the way, emphasizing that this is big and important and consequential and occurring in a presidential year, and they can't have any T's uncrossed or I's undotted. And my suspicion is that it'll just delay and delay and delay and hope that the November election occurs before anybody starts saying, when are you guys going to resolve this? Which is still bad, but that's, you know, that's what it is. So I don't know if we can definitely say there's no indictment coming. On the other hand, if you're betting against, I'm sure Obama's behavior gives one more reason to feel confident in your bet.
Wow. So if they drop the indictment after she's elected, she'd be the first president to be arrested while in office since Charles Logan.
Ah, very good, Greg. Very good. At that point, you know, there would be some quick, let's pay the, you know, like it would make the Petraeus deal look heavy-handed.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and this will be the highest one for the blood pressure today, I'm guessing. Yesterday, a group of conservative grassroots activists met in Washington, and the not-so-secret item on the agenda was how to stop Donald Trump from, A, becoming the nominee, and B, from becoming president of the United States. They basically came up with a statement afterwards saying the key here is for Trump not to get to 1237. Well, we want a unity ticket that could potentially get everybody who doesn't want Trump to 1237 at the convention, probably not on the first ballot, but perhaps beyond that. They want everybody who's not still in the race to get behind probably Ted Cruz. It doesn't say that, but to turn against Trump, certainly, in the rest of this presidential primary season. And then they say if it is Trump and Hillary, they might have to look elsewhere down the road for a place to do business other than the Republican Party. In response to that, a former Arkansas governor and two-time presidential candidate Mike Huckabee, who has not officially endorsed Trump but might as well, appeared with Gretchen Carlson on the Fox News Channel. And he seems to think that this sort of meeting is a direct snubbing of the voters. A couple of clips here. Here's the first one.
You know, look, I wanted to be the nominee, Gretchen. That's right. Why I ran. But guess what? I'm not. So I'm not going to go start a third party. I'm not going to try to blow up the Republican Party because I didn't get my way. I accept that in an election, voters get to make this decision.
Then Carlson said, but these aren't the establishment. These are conservative grassroots activists. Isn't there a difference? And Huckabee went here.
Let me explain something about the inner workings of the quote, the conservative activist. The real thing that's going on, and people haven't understood it, what Donald Trump threatens is not just the political orthodoxy. What he threatens is the economic engine of the political consultant class, who always are going to be able to make a lot of money on every election because there's an insular group of consultants and advisors, and these are not people who are in Donald Trump's orbit.
Right.
And they know that if Donald Trump gets elected, it is their economic world, their power. It disappears. It goes away.
And finally, he has this advice for people who don't like Donald Trump.
Forgive me if I don't have to get out a box of Kleenex right now and cry all over my britches, because this is about when voters make a decision, you suck it up and accept it.
Jim, the story of this week, perhaps, after Trump's big performance on Tuesday night, is this concerted effort from him and his surrogates to pretend the 1237 doesn't matter anymore as long as he's got a lead in delegates.
You know, I just thought this is the diabetes machine pitch man Mike Huckabee lamenting the greed of other people. And also, this is the guy who compared Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey to the Fort Hood shooter, who says that other people are overreacting and throwing a fit because they're not getting their way. This is the same Mike Huckabee? Okay, just making sure. If you've had a nagging feeling of not liking Mike Huckabee since, 2007, it's been a really good couple of years to kind of affirm those early first suspicions. One is that Donald Trump recognized has gotten 37% of the votes in this primary so far, which means 63% preferred somebody else. Now, obviously, you ask me, Republican voters, could you live with or would you accept Trump as the nominee? And sometimes he gets 50%, sometimes he gets 55%, sometimes he gets 60%. But that still leaves 40%, sometimes in some of these exit polls, half the party saying, no, if Trump is the nominee, I'm going to look at third-party options. Doesn't mean everyone's definitely going to vote for third-party options. But there's a large, you know, look, the Never Trump movement is real. It's not bluffing. It's not temper tantrum. It is, look, there's nothing about this guy that's conservative. And, oh, by the way, he's authoritarian. And, oh, by the way, he's vulgar. And, oh, by the way, he lies all the time. I used to say, you know, every statement from Barack Obama comes with an expiration date, all of them. Well, with Trump, the expiration date comes mid-sentence. Sometimes the end of the sentence contradicts the beginning of the sentence. And in light of that, Huckabee, oh, you guys are throwing a tantrum. No, buddy. You're the guy who was at like 0-1% in Iowa for 6 weeks before the Iowa caucuses, and you insisted upon staying in there. So, you know, no, Mike Huckabee, you don't get to lecture anybody for about what a conservative is and what's real and all that stuff. Greg, I thought I had a really low opinion of Mike Huckabee, but I want to salute you, Greg. You found a way to drive it lower.
Well, it's just so inconsistent. Remember back a few weeks before Iowa where some religious leaders who had endorsed him back in 2008 were endorsing different candidates this time around. And he said that they didn't really care about their issues, that they were only interested in keeping their own pockets lined going forward. They're worried about the business.
He would solve the problems of the country, and then these groups would not be able to fundraise on them.
Yes. And now, when it's somebody who's completely antithetical to those ideas, suck it up and vote for him.
Yeah. You know, remember that we go back to 2007 when he called the Club for Growth the Club for Greed. You notice that Mike Huckabee, big, lovable Mike Huckabee, plays the guitar, had that fun show on Fox News weekends or something. He's got this mean streak. And you notice that every time he gets into a dispute with somebody, that other person is motivated by greed. That other person is motivated by selfishness. As he mentioned, when he lashed out at all those former allies and colleagues of his that had endorsed Ted Cruz, they're all in it for themselves. The only guy with pure motives in all this is always Mike Huckabee. And, you know, And then he wonders why people find him so insufferable. Look, Trump is the giant dagger that is you know, plunging into the heart of the conservative movement right now. But I think somebody like Mike Huckabee is kind of the lemon juice. He's the one who's kind of adding to this sense that, you know, it's not just like it's not just Republicans arguing with Republicans. These are at least self-described or self-identified conservatives arguing with each other and insisting that because they have a different preference for who they for which candidate they want. Guys like Huckabee running around saying this is all out of selfishness, this is all out of that. It is the single most bitter thing I've seen, Greg, since Mike Murphy's interview in the Weekly Standard, where he blames the collapse of the Jeb Bush campaign on everybody in the entire world except for Jeb Bush and Mike Murphy.
Well, the good news heading into the weekend is that even this big conference with the grassroots activists wasn't necessary because obviously everyone's going to coalesce around Cruz now because Lindsey Graham's on board, so...
That was a fun, you know, as I said, I want to see some sort of buddy cop movie, you know. One's a maverick who doesn't like to play by the Washington rules. One's a soft-spoken, genial Southern gentleman who likes to do, you know, it's, or they could do a mismatched roommates type sitcom or something. But no, it's been kind of amusing. And I believe at one point Lindsey Graham had said to describing the choice between Trump and Cruz as, do you want to get poisoned or do you want to get shot?
Yes.
And yesterday he turned around and said, let's all get behind Cruz. So I think what he should have said is like, I meant it's like, do you want to get poisoned or do you want to do shots? And Lindsey Graham is always up for those.
Well, another record. I think this is the quickest shift from someone making jokes about murdering a candidate to endorsing them. So
there you go. And who thinks consistency and principle are good in politics? Hey, Greg, I feel like going on vacation, so I'll see you a week from now.
You have a great time. I think everybody could use a rest, but you have a good week off, and we'll talk to you after Easter.
See you in a week, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend, and do tune in on Monday. We'll be back with more of the 3 Martini Lunch.